mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
The word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Many climate scientists argue that we've passed the point of being able to slow down CO2 emissions that contribute to greenhouse gases. A few advocate for mammoth-scale projects, geoengineering projects, to alter the Earth's climate. While geoengineering is considered drastic and controversial, a new proposal is to engineer human beings to be more energy efficient. Sound far-fetched? Matthew Liao, professor of philosophy and bioethics at New York University, is lead author of Human Engineering and Climate Change, which puts forward ideas on making future generations shorter, smarter, and more vegetarian. And it will appear in the forthcoming issue of Ethics, Policy, and the Environment. Matthew Liao, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much, Virginia.
Human engineering for altering climate change. So changing our behavior, of course, that makes sense to a lot of people. Changing our biology seems drastic, if not a little like a science fiction plot.
Right. Some people are taking, as you said, some people are taking seriously the idea that we have to do this massive manipulation of the Earth, what's called geoengineering. So some people are suggesting that we have to spray sulfate aerosol into the air, and this could be really damaging to the ozone layer. Other people are suggesting that we fertilize the ocean bed, to make ocean a better carbon sink. Mm-hmm. This could kill all the life forms in the ocean. And so in that context, we're suggesting that maybe we should think about a whole class of new solutions that just have not been considered. And basically, we're calling them human engineering, which is biomodification to ourselves so that we can better adapt and mitigate the effects of climate change.
And to ourselves, meaning this is not coercive human engineering.
That's right. That's right. So two things to say. One is that we're not... they all should be voluntary. They should be non-coercive. And ideally, they should be solutions that are kind of win-win solutions. They should be solutions that some of us might even find attractive to adopt.
Well, let's go through some of the proposed alterations to make humans more efficient. First, eat less meat. So what kind of result would that have?
So human ecological footprints are partly correlated with our size. So if we sort of reduce our size, then that's going to have a big effect on the climate. In terms of reducing meat, it's been estimated that 51% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions are the result of livestock. And so the idea here is that if you can target certain types of meat, and maybe create some sort of meat patch, like a nicotine patch, then you can really reduce that effect.
So like a nicotine patch, if you were wearing a meat patch, smoking cigarettes would make you feel, what, toxic, sick?
That's right. Well, so it could be as simple as, there are things that you can take now where something that's really bitter can become sweet. So if you take the proteins of certain bovine protein, for example, and you make it so that instead of tasting it certain way, it starts to taste bitter, say, that could have a drastic effect on people's taste towards.
So sort of turning them off to meat.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So it need not be anything more than that. It need not make them nauseous or things like that.
Well, let's go to this idea of making future humans smaller. I mean, not the trend in the U.S. anyway, which is getting heavier and heavier. But doesn't this also, Matthew, reverse the evolutionary process of humans growing taller and taller over time?
That's a really good question. I think that there's sort of right now we're getting bigger and taller, and there's really no evolutionary advantage to being bigger or and taller these days. So we have a couple, the person who was 8 feet tall, and people are trying to give him sort of hormones so that he would be, you know, it would stunt his growth. And so in that context, we should ask ourselves, do we really need to be even taller than that? Do we really need to be 8 feet tall? Do we really need to be 9 feet tall? What's the optimal size? And if we just remember that 100 years ago, we are all, you know, on the average, we all tend to be 5 to 10 inches shorter. Mm. And that didn't seem to affect our cognitive abilities. And so it seems like that, you know, that could be a way by which we can address climate change, because if you reduce size, then that has drastic impact on the on your carbon footprints in terms of the amount of clothes you need to wear, transportation, how much energy it takes to transport heavier people compared to lighter people, and so on.
So you're proposing doing this through hormonal treatments and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. This is something that's used in in vitro clinics today. And you also propose human engineering is the most ethical of solutions for climate change, emphasizing that the changes are made by choice. But I'm thinking about, you know, bioengineering children before birth. There's no choice for the child. Isn't it a parent selecting traits for a child? So what are the ethical implications of that?
Oh, good. So in terms of selection, so one of the things we try to talk about are sort of technologies that we already have, things like PGD. But you can go even a bit further back before that. I'll talk about PGD in a minute. But say we can identify height genes now,
yeah,
and you just select sperm or an egg with a certain height, and you fertilize them. It seems like there's no ethical question there, at least in the sense that if you had selected a different sperm or a different egg, a different child would have existed. So the child who was selected can't complain that she would have been taller or shorter because if you had selected a different sperm, it would have been a different child. So in philosophy, this is called the non-identity problem. And you can do the same thing with PGD. If you had selected a different embryo, so you have two embryos, one taller, one shorter, and you select to implant the shorter, the embryo that who is going to be shorter, that child cannot complain that she, about being shorter because she wouldn't have existed had you selected the taller.
Okay,
embryo.
So you're saying selection rather than sort of modifying.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So the coercion comes at the when you actually give people in terms of hormone treatments, when you give children who are going to be certain height, destined to be certain height, and then you give them certain treatment to either make them taller or shorter. And there, that is more controversial. So we really need to think about that and sort of put that in the context of the problem of climate change.
Matthew, your paper also calls for using pharmaceuticals to enhance empathy and altruism. These are values which apparently are high in people who feel positively about the environment.
Right.
So now you're talking about altering a value or belief system.
It's actually neither. Think of it as enablers. So some people tend to, a lot of us tend to have weakness of will. So I might think that certain things are like I should recycle more, mm-hmm, or I should maybe eat less meat, but due to weakness of will, I just don't do that. You know, it's convenient, the meat tastes really good, so I go ahead and eat the meat. But if you make people more altruistic, when you start to use things like oxytocin, people start to think about others. They take them into account. And in that way, you kind of enable them. You give them, they think more about others, and then they're likely to sort of act in sort of a better way.
I have to admit, I mean, when I was reading this, it was almost like reading, you know, Gulliver's Travels or some very clever,
right,
clever satire of human behavior. And it made me wonder if you and your team wrote this just to be provocative.
Some of the solutions are definitely provocative, but part of it isn't. The problem is that we have people are sort of suggesting that we should adopt geoengineering, which at least personally I find very scary because we only have one planet, and if you mess up or if you engage in sort of large scale manipulation and something bad happens, that's it for mankind. And so in that context, we thought we should really seriously consider this whole class of solutions that we just haven't considered.
Matthew Leo, professor of philosophy and bioethics at New York University, also lead author of Human Engineering and Climate Change. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia.
His proposal to make future generations shorter, smarter, and more vegetarian, and therefore more energy efficient, appears in the forthcoming issue of Ethics, Policy, and the Environment. We have a link to much more in his provocative paper at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd love to hear what you think. Desperate measures for desperate times? Is it time to change people if we can't change the climate? Would you volunteer to be made nauseous from meat? More empathetic? Should we just be giving people pills to believe in climate change? You can post your thoughts at wordofmouthradio.org. Also, find links to follow us or post your reaction on Facebook and on Twitter.